This is Pure Decking for February the 7th, 2012. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morp. Tonight we got Sard and Fox. Hi, guys.
Yo.
Hey, dude.
It's actually a legitimate hi because we haven't been talking for, like, you know, an hour like we usually do. So, yeah. Right. Shit. I said the right year, didn't I?
Yep.
You know, that joke... I started doing that joke when I was working as a cashier at a grocery store back in high school. And what it was is people would always, when they're writing out their check to pay for their groceries, they would always ask you the day. And so I started doing that, giving them the correct day, the correct month, and then some whack-ass year to see if they catch it. And, you know, it's really funny when somebody postdates their check by about 40 years and then sir, I'm very sorry, I was making a small joke. And he looks at the year and goes, oh, shit.
That's right. 1942. You are that retarded. Get out of my store.
Yeah. I remember 1942. That was a good year. We were at war.
Smith Radio.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's fun, but hell, I've been sick today. I was even going to skip doing the show tonight, but I've got too much good stuff. So... I don't want to miss it too much. I'm doing better than I was earlier this morning, but fuck. So.
Yeah, diseases are never fun.
No. No, they're not.
You've been hanging around BSV, haven't you?
Apparently, because I tell you what, it was hard to get more than 5 feet from a bathroom this morning. I tell you what. But, nobody wants to hear about my bowel issues. They want to hear about tech shit. So, not my shit, tech shit. Right.
That's some shit.
Yeah. Ain't that some shit? So, that's not working at all. It's not even funny. Moving on. First story. This one's from Torrent Freak. BT Junkie, one of the largest BitTorrent indexes on the internet, has decided to shut down voluntarily. A combination of legal action against, Mega Upload and other file sharing sites and time consuming projects has led to the drastic decision that takes one of the main players in the BitTorrent landscape. They posted on the main page, "This is the end of the line, my friends. The decision does not come easily, but we've decided to voluntarily shut down. We've been fighting for years for your right to communicate, and it's time to move on. It's been an experience of a lifetime. We wish you all the best." Talking to Torp Frink, BT Junkie's founder said that legal actions against other file sharing sites such as Mega Upload and the Pirate Bay played an important role in making the difficult decision. Witnessing all the trouble colleagues got into was a cause for a lot of worry and stress, and now those will be in the past. So basically, they scared the shit out of the guy running BT Junkie. He thought he was going to jail too, so he shut down.
Bummer.
Yeah. And
you're letting them win by giving in, goddammit.
Yep. So I just got a message from Suave.
Hey. Be nice if the Pirate Bay could have ever followed through on their plan to buy an island in international waters and just pretty much tell everyone else to fuck.
But everyone always says that, and it's funny because I was reading, I was reading something on that. On Slashdot, they were talking about that. There's this one island off of England's coast that everyone always says, like, yeah, we're going to go move our data center there
because it's
supposedly in international waters. What were you going to say?
Oh, okay. Well, so I was saying he's not going to be on the show tonight. But I thought the idea was an island, but to get the old oil rigs.
Yeah. Oh, those two. I guess I was reading something about they were moving to this, like I said, this island. I forget what it's called, but it's off of England's coast. And it's like technically in international waters, but it's like technically
But England will still defend it.
England's water. Yeah, well, England is pretty much like saying, yeah, like, okay, whatever, you guys can be your own country, we don't give a fuck. But the second something, like, big goes down there, you know England's just going to go over there and say, yeah, you guys are us again. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's not, I don't know, it's like one of those promotional stunts.
Is that the
international water, is that still no one's ever done it?
Is that the island that you always see the picture of where it's like, you know, the island's, you know, maybe a couple of football fields across and they've got a car on it and the picture's always, why do you have this?
Probably.
I haven't seen that
one. It's probably something like that.
That's an ancient, you haven't seen that?
I don't think so.
you're just not as steeped in internet culture as we thought.
I guess I'm not. Sorry. I have failed you. We'll go commit seppuku immediately.
No, don't do that. I need you to finish the show first. anyways, so, yeah, that's my issue with the whole island idea, is the moment you go out there, you get the old oil rig, you set it up, you know, I don't know how you do your fiber line, but somehow you get a connection out there, you know, radio, satellite, whatever. And, so you've got this offshore country in international waters running these servers, so there's no law out there. That's why pirates operate in international waters. There's no law out there. So it's like, yay, we're setting up servers and IT infrastructure. And then you've got the other guys coming up. Yeah, we've got, you know, guns. So we're going to take your servers and blow you the hell up. So it's like, oh.
Yeah, see, I'm pretty sure that anybody that would be crazy enough to set up a shop like that on an oil rig would also have guns.
I would hope so, because the thing with a setup like that is when the USS MPA shows up to blow your ass up with just not reporting it on the news. Yep, that's the picture. The little car.
Yeah, I see that. I've never actually seen that before. So
that used to float around all over the place.
That was actually one of the comments that people were making, is like, you know, England could go in there with like military force and say like, no, you guys are part of us and I get the full law. But more than likely what they were saying, what they would do is just like trade embargo everything. Like, you can't have a data center there, people working there, if you guys can't get food.
That's very true.
Like that. It would be very easy.
You know, it'd be really expensive to supply it. But again,
yeah.
If you're going to run a data center out in the international waters, you still got to get connectivity. And the only practical way of running a data center with that kind of the kind of bandwidth you would need would be fiber link. So
I was just going to say, jack into all those freaking fiber lines that are running across the Atlantic, dude.
Yeah,
just
those
splice
are hard
into that shit.
Yeah, those are hard to get your hands on, for one thing. They're kind of deep. But, you know, so you got to run a new fiber line back somewhere and you got to connect it up somewhere. So what's going to end up happening is, okay, sure, you've got your data center in international waters. They're just going to go shut down the place where you plug it in. So wherever you're getting your network connection from, they'll just shut that down and then bomb you and it won't even be on the news. So that's, you know, that's the whole problem with leaving the protection of your country, is you are just open to being shot.
Well, you have to defend yourself now. You don't have people, other people to do it for you.
That is the ultimate in personal responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, one dude with an AK standing on the roof versus like an F-16.
That would be an interesting game of Quake, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I was just going to say, the only thing, there's got to be a picture around it somewhere of what, like, you know, a meme of like, don't worry, I got this.
That would be the dude handing the small child the axe.
Yeah,
okay.
So, but moving on, this next one, speaking of, you know, funny pictures on the internet, this one's great. It's actually a fail blog, but
Fail blog?
It's
tech news? Really?
Yes. Well, it actually fits for us. If you go look at the picture, it's on Fail Book on Fail Blog, which is Dustin Checks In. And the summary of this whole long post, and it's a screenshot, is the Alabama Sheriff's Office posted a picture of this guy, Dustin, and, you know, that he had an outstanding warrant for forceful rape. And they posted him as the Creep of the Week on Facebook. Well, the guy has a Facebook account, and he sees this. So he posts on the Alabama Sheriff walls, well, good thing I moved out of state. And then there's this long conversation of somebody in the sheriff's office taking the time to talk to this guy on Facebook and him going back and forth, where they eventually convince him to get a lawyer and turn himself in. Now, obviously, we don't know if they were going to do that or if he was just posting it. But Yeah, you actually had the dude they were after talking to them on Facebook.
Which wow.
Doesn't seem that great as far as the whole hiding thing goes. But
no, but like that just shows you like what level our society has now gone to. Like, yeah, what? Like yeah. The dude is talking to the cops yeah. on Facebook saying, "Ha, I'm out of state."
Well, and no, if you go I'm read it, they actually they have a conversation.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. Like, he's actually like, "Well, if I turn myself in, where's my trial?" And blah blah blah. And that's hilarious.
Well, and if you think about it, if he does what he's claiming he's going to do in this conversation, which is get a lawyer and turn himself in, is it a bad thing they posted this crap? Probably not, especially because he's wanted for rape. But
yeah. Hey man, it's not rape. He just didn't yell. He just forgot to yell surprise.
But yeah, I don't know about that one. Just because you know, it's one of those things where he is accused. It's not.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I love it, dude. The second to last post, what he posts on there is the only thing I've got to say is I didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah. And somebody else at the bottom. Whoa, this is awkward.
This is awkward.
So, wow. It's a good read, and it got me thinking. Is it such a, you know, at first everybody's like, oh, you shouldn't post this kind of crap on the internet. But on the other hand, it's hilarious. And if you're actually able to get a hold of people one way or the other, I mean, you know, they could probably go to Facebook and be like, yeah, where the, you know, what do you got on this guy? Is it from a phone? Is it from a, you know, can you give us a GPS grid? What? Now, granted, once you get through the legal, process, he could be long gone from wherever it was he was posting this stuff. But, you know, somebody else posted, oh, I saw him on this, you know. That's the other thing is it got me thinking. It's like we need Facebook bounties, like old wanted posters, but with like, you know, reward $500.
Oh, that would be cool.
And as opposed to, you know, actually going after them with a gun and dragging the corpse back to get paid, you know, snapshot and GPS geotag it, you know, take a picture of the dude, geotag it, send it to the cops. This is that app they were talking about on IHN last week. But if you tied rewards to it, you would get a lot of these guys arrested. Wick.
Oh yeah. Like, so, does Facebook take a cut because their phone reports in like so and so was last seen between at this bar or whatever?
I would imagine, but I was just thinking the Facebook bounty system is that could be quite the profitable venture there. So,
oh yeah,
I'm waiting for that to start.
Here on Pure Decking, we want a cut.
We want a cut. Damn right. We want to patent the idea. Sell
hell
it
yeah.
Me. So, next up, got this one's from CNET, but this has been posted all over the place, and we talked about it back when it happened. We back when the Symantec source code, it was leaked that Anonymous had gotten into it and hacked it for PC Anywhere, Symantec Endpoint Protection, and one of the Norton editions. Anonymous managed to get the source code for, and they were going to release it. And then they didn't, and now we know why. Now, I've got a problem with the way this is written, and I'll get into that in a minute, and it could just be that there's information missing here. But as part of the sting operation, Symantec told a hacker group that it would pay $50,000 to keep the source code from some of its flagship security products off the internet, according to the company admitted this. An email exchange revealed the extortion attempt posted to Pastebin, and I've got the link in the show notes, today showed that a purported Symantec employee named Sam Thomas negotiated payment with an individual named Yamatuff, who is the guy who was on Twitter saying he had the source code, to prevent the release of PC Anywhere in the Norton antivirus code. Yamatuff is the Twitter identity of an individual group that had previously, you know, they threatened to release, and we talked about it at the time. We'll pay you $50,000 USD total, Thomas said in an email dated last Thursday. However, we need assurances that you are not going to release the code after payment. We will pay you $2,500 a month for the first 3 months. Payments start next week. After the first 3 months, you have to convince us that you've destroyed the code before we pay the balance. We are trusting you to keep your end. Now, the problem I have, and that's out of the CNET slug. This is all over the place, so it's pretty easy to find the source. The problem I have is they're saying at one point they're saying Symantec offered to pay. At the other point, you know, they're saying that you know, the hackers were trying to extort it out of them. Is it extortion if the victim offers?
good point.
I mean, I honestly don't know.
They're offering, yeah, it's just like a settling outside of court type thing.
Well, yeah.
We'll give you this money and you don't do that or go the fuck away.
You know, and that's the thing. If you could argue what the RIA and the MPAA do is extortion. But I'm just wondering, and it could just be that the way it's written, it's just not explained very well. And I have not had a chance to sit down and go through the whole email chain because, like I said, I've been sick and this came out today. But I did get the key phrase out of the email that I really liked. And I've got the pastebin linked up. I don't know how long that's going to be up. So if this kind of thing really concerns you, you probably ought to go in and do a save as. But, you know, the quote I got from, this is an email sent from Symantec to Yamatuf. We can't pay you $50,000 at once for the reasons we discussed previously. We can pay you $2,500 per month for the first 3 months. In exchange, you will make a public statement on behalf of your group that you lied about the hack, as you previously stated. Once that's done, you will pay the rest, or we will pay the rest of the 52-year account, and you can take it all at once. That should solve your problem. That was the choice bit I found in just scanning through it real quick, looking to see what was in it. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to really sit down and go through it all. But, Symantec, as part of the payoff, wanted them to lie and say, no, the hack didn't actually happen. We were just full of shit. Now, the other thing I have linked up, the second pastebin in the show notes, is the release, where they actually released the PC Anywhere source code on the Pirate Bay. And I should point out, we didn't talk about it on the show, but the Pirate Bay did change their primary domain from .org to .se. That way, their primary domain is not hosted in the United States anymore, so they don't have to worry about being subject to some of our crazy-ass laws. So, yeah.
Wow.
And
that's a crazy, like, modern day time freaking cyber extortion. And the lying part is just awesome.
Actually,
just great.
the reason I want to talk about this is actually standard fare. This really is how it works. Generally, and this is why groups like Anonymous and AntiSec are kind of oddball in the network security field. They're not hacking for traditional reasons, they're hacking for political reasons, generally. They're wanting to make a statement, or they're targeting individuals for reasons outside of targets of opportunity.
You pissed them off, then they come after you.
Right. Now, generally, what happens with your hacking groups is they break into a company and they get, you know, their customer database, payroll, credit cards, whatever, right? You know, whatever your loot is, so to speak. In this case, it was source code. And there's a couple of ways to make money off of hacking. One of them is, once you get that kind of personal information, you go on to very specific exchanges and swap out credit card numbers for, well, these days they actually do it in Bitcoin, but then they swap Bitcoin for cash. Sometimes they just do cash directly. They like Bitcoin because it's apparently easy enough to set up identities over and over and over again and make it a little easier to launder your money. But
How prevalent is this? I mean, you're saying it happens all the time. This is the first time, at least that I can remember, that it's actually gone public and people have, you know, we have email strings to prove that, hey, you know, even
happens
they were
a lot, actually. Huh. The way you catch it is not by watching tech news. The way you catch it is going and reading companies' financials. Generally, most large organizations, especially because of Sarbanes-Oxley, their financial reporting is very, very detailed. But a lot of times you'll see these strange, vague, you know, consulting, security, network fee. And they'll be for these kinds of amounts. And that's where they've paid off a hacker to either stay out of their network or give them back their stuff. Or now, this doesn't always work. You got to be really careful in what you're going for with this kind of stuff. Generally, they want money, and they're going to want to bounce it through a couple of foreign accounts to make it difficult to trace. You know, sometimes they do it on, like, the gold exchanges. I've heard some even do it in stocks, which I'm not as up to speed on the underground markets as I once was. So I couldn't tell you what they're doing currently. I know there is a lot of information out there that they do it in bitcoins currently, which I find odd because the bottom fell out of bitcoins, but I think it's stabled out again. I don't know.
Right.
I haven't been following Bitcoins that much lately.
Yeah, but, I was going to say it's more than, what, 250 or something it was?
Yeah, it's not way up to like $30 a coin or whatever it was when it exploded, but I think it's stabled out.
Hmm.
So anyways, though, yeah, this is actually what happens is they generally, they give them hush money to give them back whatever they took and just shut the hell up about it. And generally the hackers, they follow the agreement because they want to get that name for themselves that, oh, no, if you pay us off, we'll leave you alone.
Right, that they're legit and they actually won't fuck them over in the end.
Right, that way they can pull the scam again.
Again, exactly.
And not get, and have a better chance of getting paid as opposed to just, okay, they're calling the FBI and, you know, you get to drop things on the Pirate Bay. So
right, makes sense.
Generally, the hackers don't want to drop stuff on Pirate Bay. They don't want to put it all out there and they don't want to sell it. They want to get the big payout from the company and call it a night.
Yeah.
It's less to trace. Whereas if you go online and you're selling credit cards and identity information and shit like that, you got a better chance of getting caught because those places are full of plants these days. FBI is, you know, it's not like it used to be. They're watching these things these days.
Sure.
So, but it still goes on.
That's awesome. And then also to touch obviously on the other fucked up part about this is Symantec wanting them to lie about it. Obviously, to cover their ass, because if I remember correctly, it was the Enterprise Edition. So they have all these enterprises saying, what the fuck, Symantec?
I know of several enterprises that rely on current Symantec.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you know what this reminds me of? I just reread today, or actually maybe it might have been last week, but I think it was VeriSign that admitted that they got hacked in 2010. Yeah, and then covered it up, didn't say shit, and they're just now...
It accidentally got released in one of their document dumps.
But, yeah,
yeah, they were trying to mask it. No, this kind of shit actually happens a lot. The, you know, it's things like, well, a really good example, and it's never been owned up to, but I honestly believe that the World of Warcraft authentication servers have been owned for a very long time. The number of accounts you hear about getting popped in WoW. Even with people who've got like the authenticator and the thing on their cell phone and all the other stuff, you know, because they're getting inactive accounts and popping them, and reactivating them with stolen credit cards so they can, you know, get stuff
get the
off.
Loot.
I don't know the economy of stolen WoW accounts, but
yeah, pretty much everybody that I know that was hardcore into WoW for quite a while, in my area, have had their accounts hacked at one time or another.
Even the guys who know exactly what they're doing and don't have shit on their machine, right?
Yeah, like a couple of the guys that went to, what the fuck do they call it, like BlizzCon, and they got the little fob thing, you hit the button and it, you know, generates a random string of numbers.
Yeah, they still got popped.
That shit in. And their accounts got fucked.
Yeah, you want to have some fun, go on YouTube and search WoW account hacked. You'll get some great reaction videos.
Oh, yeah. Huh, that's a good point.
And there's some of them who's like, you feel really bad because it's like, oh, wow, that character was that guy's life. But yeah, no, this you know, it happens. Machines get popped all the time. And the company's big concern is not improving their security or fixing the problem. It's staying out of the news.
Yeah, exactly. It's covering their asses up and trying to hide it from their consumers.
Well, because once if it again, gets out, they have to make good on it, which means they have to give everyone identity protection, and they have to dig
more money.
It costs. It's insanely expensive. There's a booming market right now in network security insurance.
Yeah, it's funny actually. At work, they were just talking about that they were having someone come over and offer, and it's like, what the fuck exactly is that? You know. Does it cover you from hacks? I mean, it's so vague that I don't know. It seems like a scam to me.
It can be a good thing. It's not a horrible scam. It can be a scam because it's insurance. All insurance can be a scam. You know ask Aryu about that. The whole well, I had flood insurance and the house flooded. Yeah, no, that was a rising water issue. That wasn't a flood. It's like, wait, what? So it's all about the legal games they want to play. But generally, the idea is the insurance company comes in, does an assessment, and then gives you a price, and they'll hire an outside pen tester to go in and check out your network and see, okay, what are we looking at here? And then, you know, just like regular insurance, you pay your monthly premium, and then if you get hacked, you know, they've got insurances like you know, the identity protection and covering costs and system replacements and, you know, press. And I'm trying not to say you know quite as much. I'm noticing I'm saying that a lot. So it's cool. Difficult to go into details because it's different depending on the situation. If you're right. A medical institution, part of that insurance is going to be covering the fees for HIPAA. If you're a right. financial institution, part of the insurance is going to be covering the costs of identity theft protection and those kind of services for your customer base if the shit hits the fan. If you're a tech company, the cost of dealing with the loss of IP, your intellectual property, in Symantec's case here, where the source code gets out,
right?
There's a cost associated with that. I have no idea how you calculate it, and I have no idea how you even deal with that, because the PC Anywhere source code release is real. I'm not sure if it's a good idea to own up to having pulled it down, but I did, and I've picked through it. It's a real release. It's from 2006. It's a Microsoft Visual C++ project.
Huh.
And there's more in there than just the source code. They grabbed the entire, it looked like a Git tree, honestly, but I don't think it was Git. I think it was a different version control, probably some internal Symantec thing.
Right.
But it definitely looks like they grabbed it out of a code repository, and there's Word documents in there about coding style and exceptions and the way Symantec has their programmers work. So there's a lot more in there than just the code. So one thing I'm wondering is, are we going to start seeing things like the optimizations that PC Anywhere uses start showing up in some of the VNC releases? Because the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, the Java code for some of the clients, it's all there.
Yeah, the entire protocol that it talks.
Now, like I said, I'm not sure of the legality of having pulled this thing down, because it was a hacked release. And I will say the company I work for uses PC Anywhere, has a license for it, and I wanted to take a look at what this release was. So, like I said, the legality of it, I'm not sure on. At the end of the day, if I need to delete it, I'll delete it. But I'm literally pulling it down for research. I'm not doing anything with it. So, just to cover my ass there, please don't sue me.
Yeah. We understand.
Yeah, yeah, that's I'd need a, that's a sound effect I need, the don't sue me button.
Actually, that would be a cool soundbite. We gotta find something that goes along with that.
I'm just seeing a large buzzer and then voice comes on, lawsuit. You know? Lawsuit. So moving on, next one up. This one's from the Economic Policy Journal, but it's been posted multiple places as well. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, following a recent anti-piracy legislative debacle with SOPA and PIPA. That's right, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and douchebag will lead his second effort in 2012 to push internet regulating legislation, this time in the form of a new cybersecurity bill. The bill is expected to be the latest attempt by Democrats to broadly expand the authority of the executive branch agencies over the internet, because everyone knows this is a good idea. My God. It's the last... Okay, joking aside...
It worked a little last time.
Yeah, joking aside, the last thing we need is either political party regulating the internet, for obvious reasons. Details about the bill remain shrouded in secrecy. Clues available to the public suggest that the bill might be stronger than President Barack Obama's cybersecurity proposal, which released in May 2011. Reid said that he would bring the bill, expected to come out of the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, chaired by Connecticut Independent Senator Joe Lieberman, to the floor during the first Senate work period of 2012. A classified meeting behind closed doors in October 2011 between key Senate committee leaders with jurisdiction over cybersecurity and White House officials took place at the request of the Obama... blah, 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 blah. Basically, they're working on a new one. It's not, they haven't gone into any details what it is. I'll bet you it's a Xerox of SOPA or PIPA with the name Protecting Children from Online Perverts, so that when you vote against it, they can pillory you in the news.
Right.
So.
Well, I mean, wasn't everyone pretty much expecting this again? I mean, it's cool. We won the first time, got them to throw it out, but we knew that they would be back.
Pretty much. We all knew it. It seems like once they get the idea in their head, they're going to do it. They're just going to keep coming at it and coming at it and coming at it.
It'll get media attention again. I don't believe it'll slip through. And the same thing with the SOPA Act will happen. You know, maybe some websites will black out. And
they've been trying to slip through bits and pieces of it in other legislation. They got it. They were trying to attach an amendment to one of the military funding bills. It didn't. They didn't get the amendment added, but they tried.
Yeah, exactly, and that's a fucked up part
about
it. Yeah,
I did see one of the senators was trying to add a one item only law.
Yeah,
so when you submit a bill, it can only come with let's end child poverty and pornography and buy Senator Johnson a yacht.
Yeah, I mean that's something that they've needed for a very, very long time. It's an argument.
Obviously.
It's an argument for the line item veto, actually. The problem with that is it distorts the checks and balances of our government. Not that that's already fucked up, but...
Well, obviously, if they're trying to pull this shit again and trying to make amendments onto other bills, that's already fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, here's where our government... Great failure of idiot Senate is right now. In this election year, aren't they supposed to be hiding the kind of bullshit they're pulling off until next year when nobody's voting?
You would think, but there's just so much of it that it's hard to hide all of it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, next one up. This one's actually from Slashdot, and sorry to think you sent me this one.
Yep, I did.
Okay. This is a follow-up. We talked about it when it happened, I think. A hacker who tried to land an IT job at the Marriott by hacking into the company's computer systems, then unwisely extorting the company into hiring him, has been sentenced to 30 months in prison. He got off lucky, actually. The hacker started his malicious quest to land a job at Marriott by sending an email to the Marriott containing documents taken after hacking into their servers to prove his claim. He then threatened to reveal confidential information he obtained if Marriott did not give him a job in their IT department. There's all kinds of problems with this logic, but we'll get into that when I finish the story here. He was granted a job interview, and little did he know Marriott set up a sting with the U.S. Secret Service to create a fictitious Marriott employee. And he was flown face-to-face interview where he admitted more and shared details of how he hacked in. He was then arrested and pleaded guilty because they got it all on fucking tape. Marriott That's claims awesome. The incident cost the company between $400,000 and $1 million in salaries, consultant expenses, and other costs. Bullshit. They're inflating their numbers to look good.
No, who doesn't do that?
He pulled all this data out, told them how he hacked into it, didn't do anything with it, and gave it back to them. What exactly cost them $1 million?
Their pride.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was going to say certain CEOs shitting their pants.
Well, that's probably true, and I'm sure they did bring in a consulting company after the fact to go fix all the holes. So that might be might be some truth in some of those numbers. But
why hire a consulting company? This guy could do it. He knows where they are already.
That's true. That is true.
That was the idea, but obviously it didn't work out that well. You know, one thing that about this article that I was kind of caught my attention is how the fuck do you work with the Secret Service? Why isn't it CIA or something like that? It
you
says
can call them.
The Secret Service.
Yeah, you can call them.
That's fucking cool.
I don't know why you would. I mean, you're right. Usually, it's easier to get a hold of the FBI. They have regional.
Yeah,
offices.
FBI, CIA, or whatever.
Well,
you know?
CIA is not domestic, but
that's true.
Where I work,
way too busy protecting the president. Right? Can you come look at our IT security and arrest this dude?
Well,
yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
He made us look like morons.
Yeah,
yeah.
I imagine what happened is they already had a contact in the Secret Service, so they just worked through that. Where I work, we have a couple of contacts with the FBI, primarily because, I found this out because we had a couple of servers get popped, and it turned out they'd been popped for a while. And when they finally let me go in and look at some of this shit, we discovered how long they'd been popped. And, look, there's all this encrypted stuff that people have been storing on them. So immediately I was concerned we were going to be making a call to the FBI because I thought there's stuff on there I don't want to be responsible for. And it turned out not to be the case. It was still horrifying. It just wasn't illegal. So we were just able to format the box and call it a day. But
so in other words, you found RU's data repository.
We found that instead of the kiddie porn, and I was quite relieved.
That's good.
You know, it's like when you open it up and it's like, oh, good, it's just German incest porn. It's like, it's like, good, I can just delete this. I don't have to call the FBI. So it's still horrifying, and I really wish I didn't know it existed, but, you know, we'll count that as a win. So, yeah, going back a couple of stories to the Symantec thing, when you extort a company for money, you do it in a way that doesn't involve giving them your social security number, mailing address, and
obviously,
you know, letting them fly you someplace specific for an interview, because you will get arrested. Just, you know, a little tip, just a thought there. So, obviously, though, if you think about it, if you're dumb enough, this used to be a thing. You know, it used to be, oh, I hacked into your system, ha ha ha, and you'd end up getting hired by the company. That's not the way it works anymore. It used to be. The problem today is there's enough qualified people out there who know their shit that you don't have to resort to hiring the people who hacked you anymore. There's you know, a couple of other consultants over there who know just as much about this stuff as you do. And, yeah. So...
makes sense.
Yep, yep. Moving right along. This one's just sad. It was revealed yesterday. It's from linuxuser.co.uk. It was revealed yesterday that Canonical will no longer commercially support Kubuntu, the KDE spinoff to Ubuntu. While still an official Ubuntu derivative, Kubuntu will now only receive the community support of other variants such as Edubuntu and Zubuntu after the release of 12.04. The Kubuntu project was the first major Ubuntu derivative, starting with KDE-based release of 5.04, and after 7 years, the distro has not been as popular as its big brother. This is a rational business decision, posted John Riddle, a developer on Kubuntu. Yeah, I'm sure he wanted to post this. And since it's a post, I wonder if somebody else went in under his name. Kubuntu has not been a business success after 7 years of trying and is unrealistic to expect it to continue to have financial resources put to it. So in other words, they're cutting off his thing and he's being cordial about it. Bullshit. So
he's not pissed.
No, no. But, you know, what I think this actually is, I think this is Ubuntu, like, no, you're using Unity. If you're using Ubuntu, using Unity.
I was just going to make a comment about that, dude. Just add it onto the long list of fail that is Unity. And here they go. They'll probably just, you know, kill off any other ones. Is the Xubuntu? No, I was going to say that's Zubuntu? Not. That's a,
well, they're, okay, yeah. They're not telling him he can't do it anymore. It's, and they're
right,
not, they're
they just
not
aren't
shutting
giving
it down.
Them money. Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, I just figured that's it's all tied to Unity. It's got to be. And honestly, in my opinion, you'll probably get a bunch of hate mail about this, but and nothing of value was lost. KDE sucks. Ha ha.
I like KDE. I like it better than Unity.
No, I like it. I like it better than Unity too. But I know the
I like it better than GNOME 3.
I don't know. I haven't played around with GNOME 3 enough to mess around with it, but
yeah, I mean, most of my machines Linux-wise aren't still GNOME 2, but I liked KDE 4. The initial release of it was god awful, but some of the current versions of it are fine. It's got that plastic interface on it, but you can actually change that. It's not a big deal. You can go in and make it look decent. You got to do that for any Linux distro these days anyways. They all do that.
Yeah.
They've all got tablet envy except for Ubuntu, which just went hardcore with the Mac envy. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, moving on to the last story I've got, which is just a real winner. So check the time. Wow. Okay, this one's hilarious. It's from IO9. It's not really tech-related. It's more of an I-have-nothing story, but I had to read this because I want to see if I can get through it without laughing my ass off. In 1995, New Mexico State Senator Duncan Scott was getting aggravated by the number of psychologists and psychiatrists being used as expert witnesses in legal trials. To protest this perceived overuse of the psychiatric professionals, Scott tacked the following protest amendment onto a bill. When a psychologist or psychiatric testifies during a defendant's competency hearing, the psychologist or psychiatric shall wear a cone-shaped hat that is not less than 2 feet tall. The surface of the hat shall be imprinted with stars and lightning bolts. Additionally, a psychologist or psychiatric shall be required to don a white beard that is not less than 18 inches in length, and shall punctuate critical elements of his testimony by stabbing the air with a wand. Whenever a psychologist or psychiatric provides expert testimony during a defendant's competency, the bailiff shall dim the courtroom lights and administer two strikes to a Chinese gong. Surprisingly, the amendment passed unanimously in the Senate, but was ultimately excised before it reached the House. I like this. I want to see more odd uniforms for professionals in courtrooms.
Fuck yes. That is hilarious.
This guy was getting tired of psychologists in courtrooms telling people that you couldn't put these criminals on trial. It's like, oh no, he's got battered wife syndrome or, you know, some bullshit to put him in psych ward instead of prison. So he was like, yep, you're going to dress as a wizard from now on, and we're going to have a gong. I want that. I need that on the soundboard. I need a Chinese gong.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, so, that is...
Especially for, like, the Digital Dojo.
Oh! Yeah. Yes.
Most honorable.
Speaking of Digital Dojo, it is just about that time.
Me love you long time.
Oh, there is a gong in there.
Excellent.
Most horrible.
Actually, I don't have that much in Digital Dojo tonight. Just a couple of things I found on Codeplex, which look pretty interesting. The first one is BE Explorer, which is a Windows Explorer replacement with tabs, the office-style ribbon, and it's a clone of the Explorer that's in the Windows 8 builds. So if you like the Explorer in the Windows 8, demos and you want it in Windows 7, it's got tabs, split pane view. It looks like a better Windows Explorer, right? It's
big shiny buttons.
Yeah, I was going to say, it has buttons, like god-awful ribbons on it, though.
Well, I thought it looked cool. And the thing is, when you get reading into it...
I like my desktop real estate, you know, there for the shit that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Not taken up by a giant fucking button that means edit.
Okay, the thing I liked is it was tabbed and you could do the whole split pane thing like you used to be able to do in File Manager years ago and they took away for some godforsaken reason. Like it was in Windows 3.1, you actually had an appropriate file browser with, you know, your split pane so you could move files back and forth.
You've seen the whole like comparison of Windows 3.1 to Windows 8.
Yeah, I have. It's pretty much spot on.
Yeah.
I've played with a couple of the Windows 8 betas. I'm not impressed. I don't plan on changing off 7 for that thing.
Yeah, same here. I'm actually... Oh, go ahead, Fox.
I haven't looked or played with Windows 8 at all, but I've watched some reviews on it and seen some people going through it. And, dear God, I think my eyes started to bleed about halfway through.
Yeah, it's total tablet envy, and I don't understand why people think they want... Where are, you know, Linux is doing it too. Where are people getting this idea that I want to use my desktop computer with largest, you know, dual 21-inch monitors like a freaking tablet?
Because Minority Report was a cool movie, man. It had Tom Cruise.
Touché. Yeah. That was pretty good.
I mean, if you could get like a nice, you know, parabolic display that wrapped around you and it was all touch interfacey and everything like that, then yeah, sure.
But that interface, and this is true of almost all interfaces in movies, that interface was not designed to be used day-to-day to write code, do web work, or in my case, watch a progress bar go past as you run network scan after network scan and little Python scripts for reports. But it was designed to look cool in a movie. It wasn't designed to actually, you know, work. So
yeah, that's always the case, but I mean, it could the only time I could ever see it being useful is if they, you know, really pumped the market full of inexpensive large touchscreens that people will start using on their desktop, or like somebody came out with like a Kinect-like thing specifically for the PC where you could like gesture your screen and have it do shit.
They did release a Kinect for the PC.
Oh well,
it cost twice as much as the regular one, but they did release it.
Amazing.
Yeah, what a surprise. So, last thing I've got tonight, content-wise, this one's fun. It's called Virtual Router. Virtual Router is a free open-source software based on router for PCs running... let me try that again. Virtual Router is a free open-source software-based router for PCs running Windows 7 or Windows Server 08. Using virtual router, users can wirelessly share... Man, I am fucking up this reading. Wirelessly share any internet connection, Wi-Fi, LAN, cable modem, dial-up, whatever, with any Wi-Fi device. These devices connect to virtual router just like any other access point. The connection is completely secured using WPA2. I have not checked to see if Reaver can crack this one, but Reaver does work. The wireless network created and shared with virtual router uses WPA2, and there's actually not any way to turn WPA2 off, which is a good idea. And that feature is actually coming because of the API the guy used to write it. He didn't force it in there, but I like that. So what... Just to simplify, now that I've read the guy's slug, what this is a little bit of software you load on a Windows 7 machine that has both a regular network connection and a Wi-Fi card, such as your standard-issue laptop. And when you plug it into the wired connection, you can now turn its wireless into an access point. It's all kinds of great utilitarian uses. Getting your phone on a network, an Xbox, making your network administrator's life hell. But... Yeah, you know, it's like, my God, where's all this? Why are there three Xboxes on my network? You know, it's like, we did not approve those Macs. What the hell? But the other fun thing is, think about this next time you take over a machine remotely, and it's a laptop, and it's got a Wi-Fi card, but it's plugged into the wired, which is most people do when they sit down at their desk because the wireless connection is slower.
Yeah, good point.
So now every machine you pop that has both a Wi-Fi and a wired is now potentially an access point. So if you're going for a specific target, like, say, a local office, and you can get in to one of their machines, like, and, you know, if we're talking physical access in any ways, this could be something like a Dropbox. This could be something like a, if you use one of the USB HID attacks where it pulls something down and runs it when the person's not looking just because you jack something in the back of the box, leave a thumb drive with an auto run out there in a parking lot. Boom, wireless access point. Now you can get in and you know the password because you set it up, right?
Right.
So utilitarian uses, awesome. Great way to get your Wi-Fi-only iPad online if that's all you got with you, especially if you got a friend who's willing to run it for you. That way you can get everybody online. But as far as an attack goes, oh, yeah, this is a whole new vector.
Yeah, I mean, you could, like you said, create yourself another entry point if you can get physical access to a machine.
Or if you
say they don't have any wireless access points or anything like that, so you can't
attack from that side. It doesn't require physical access. It just requires control. You need to install this.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I was using an example of, like, say, an office that didn't have wireless, but you wanted to own it, and so they have laptops that are wired into their network. Well, you don't have an attack vector of going wireless. Now you can go in there, get physical access to the machine, load it on it, load up the wireless card, and then now all of a sudden, like I said, you own that wireless network.
Or, if you don't want to do it yourself, pay a janitor. It's like, give the janitor $50 and a thumb drive, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, boom.
Man, that just reminded me of all those, from DerbyCon, those presentations on physical security and, like, social engineering. Man, like, that's just such another crazy vector route into getting into that stuff.
There's so many ways.
Yeah, you put on a work shirt and that says hacker on it, and you can walk straight in, but you look like the repair guy, so they've never seen you there before, but they let you in because you're the repair guy.
You know, you can get UPS uniforms off eBay. I'm just going to throw that out there. And
wow.
Just thought I'd mention that off the top of my head, no particular reason. So that's pretty much all I had for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. Sard's been doing work on that, and I think you were back in the box the other day. I have nothing every Saturday. The next Pure Decking on Thursday evening, the Galaxy 15 radio site and Twitter handles. I don't know if you guys got anything else to plug.
I'm going to plug Fox's mom tonight. That's about it.
Well, you know.
That's a funny thing. I was about to say the same thing about your mom.
Take pictures.
Wow.
Yeah, like, there's a black man. I was like, dude, you need to, like, loan me $5 or I'm giving you those pictures of me fucking your mom.
I bought you lunch today, bucks? Fucker. Fuck you.
Oh, right.
I'll keep those to yourself.
For another couple days.
Exactly.
All right, that's all we got.